Hey, everyone. This is another calling reorientation phone conversation. And tonight we're going to do it with Robbie Bush. This is Sam Williamson. Robbie Bush is with us. I met Robbie at a calling intensive retreat in Kentucky last summer. And then I met him again at a base camp gathering in Colorado last, I think it was October. And again, just to remind everybody, the way we do these calling orientation calls, calling reorientation, is you can be listening on the phone or you can be listening on the webcast player. I'm going to ask Robbie just to tell us a little bit about his life. And then, as he's talking, I really would like it if you could just listen. We in the audience are going to be listening. And if we have questions or observations, you can type them into the chat line. Or if you're on the phone instead of the webcast player, you can hit *2 on your phone. And my little dashboard will show that somebody wants to ask a question. And I'll just put you on the phone, and you can ask Robbie the question yourself. So we want to listen to bits of his story that he's giving us. And in our hearts, we want to be sort of praying and thinking and saying, what do we see from Robbie's life that we can just offer him more feedback? So everybody, we're listening, and we're also just trying to say, what do we see in Robbie's life that we can offer? So Robbie, I'm going to start by asking you just to give us a 10-minute a 10-minute synopsis of your life, of your 55 years. You know, just tell us what are some significant events or decisions or actions or wounds or people, something that's affected you in your life. So just tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the phone call with you. The retreat that I first went to in Kentucky really ministered to me because it was in a time that I was needing to make some decisions, and I'll just kind of, you know, get into that a little bit later. But kind of a little bit of history about myself. I'm 55 years old. I live in central Mississippi. I'm a retired district fire chief for the Jackson, Mississippi Fire Department. And I served 27 years on the fire department and still active with the volunteer fire department. And, you know, my dad is a retired firefighter. I married a retired firefighter's daughter, so it's kind of in the family. My history, kind of trying to give you a little synopsis of my history. My parents divorced when I was 4 years old, and I went to live with my grandparents. And my grandparents were very good Christian people. They took me to church every Sunday, took care of me just like I was their own child. I was probably closer to them than I was to my own parents. And when I was 8 years old, my dad remarried, and I went to live with my dad. But every weekend and every summer, I spent in the country down at my grandparents. And I went to school. I was about the only thing that really interested me during high school was music. I was real involved in the choir and the music program at my high school. And if it wasn't for that, I just don't know if I would have just hung in there and stayed with school. But I did. And then after I graduated from high school, I went to a local college.
So let me ask you a question a minute. What did you like about music?
What did I like about music? Music is just an expression of your being. It helps to express what your heart is saying. When you're down, it can lift you up. It's just, to me, it's a very spiritual thing, and it doesn't always have to be spiritual music to get that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, that's something that I've really always felt in my spirit and in my life. My entire family is musically inclined. I met my wife at college. I was actually a voice major in college, and she was a voice major as well. That's where we met. Then I went to school at that college for 1 year, and then I left there. I went to school in Tennessee at another college, at actually a church denominational school. And when I got up there, I found that the politics were pretty strong in that school. If you weren't a preacher's kid or you weren't somebody within the church, you really didn't have much of a chance to get ahead in the school. At least that's the way I felt.
Yeah.
And so I only stayed
and,
one
and you weren't any of those things.
I was not. And I was homesick and lovesick. And so after one semester, I left and came back home. And my wife and I, we dated for 4.5 years before we actually got married. And between the time I came back, about a year later, I got on the Jackson Fire Department. My dad was retiring, and he asked if I wanted to get on. I needed a job, so I said, yeah. So I put my application in. I got on the fire department, and it was really one of the greatest things I had ever done. It gave me a sense of being, a sense of purpose, to be able to help someone in their time of need is a very gratifying feeling. It takes a lot of training, a lot of preparation to be able to respond to whatever needs may come about when you're in the fire service. You don't just fight fire. You go to car wrecks. You go to first aid runs. You go to hazardous materials incidents. In the fire service, you go to all hazards, basically. And so there's a lot of training involved. And during that time where I was not very studious back in high school, I became a student, and I wanted to learn. I just had a love for learning. So I got real involved, and I actually promoted fairly quickly within our department, for our department. I went from just regular private on the department to lieutenant to captain, and then for my last 10 years on the department, I was a district chief, which I covered one-third of the city. And then after, Steve, you still, Sam, you still there?
I'm still here. I'm listening to everything you say.
Okay, I had a call coming in, so I didn't know if I'd lost you. Okay. But anyway, let's see, where was I at? Oh, fire department. There was a situation that happened when I was a captain on the fire department that was very, it was a very sad day for the fire department. We had a workplace violence incident. We had a firefighter who went off the deep end. He came into the firehouse, and his plans were to kill the fire chief and all the higher echelon. And he had gotten somebody to come in early for him, got off work, he went home and killed his wife.
Oh my God.
Then he went to the fire station. He had his gym bag loaded with guns and such, and went up to Central Fire Station. That's where my office was. I happened to be off duty that day, and he kept waiting around for the command staff meeting, and that's where he had planned to go in and try to kill everybody. And they wound up not having that meeting that day because too many people were out of place. And so they had the district chief's meeting. I was not a district chief at the time. I was a captain.
Yeah.
But I operated the mobile command post. And the office or the boardroom where they had their meetings was adjacent to my office. And when this gentleman could not complete his initial goal, he came into the district chief's meeting and started shooting. He actually killed 4 people and wounded 2 others. And I was at the library downtown. I was in college taking some courses, and I was doing some research. And I live about 40 miles south of the city of Jackson.
Yeah.
And I was pulling out of the library parking lot, and I needed to go to the station and get something out of my locker. But something just in my spirit said, no, go to the house. I had 2 kids that were homesick. My grandmother was watching them. I said, you need to go on, to the house and take care of the kids. So I went on home instead. As soon as I got home, I received a phone call letting me know what had happened. And, I knew all of these individuals very well. two of the individuals that were killed, I worked with personally. And when I got the news, I just sat down in the floor and cried. It was, you know, and that's all I could do. Then after I composed myself, I called my wife, told her what had happened, and told her I had to go to work. I had to, you know, I had to go see if there's anything I could do to help. So I left, went to the fire station. The gentleman that was on shift in my position, obviously he was tremendously torn up, so I sent him home and I stayed there, and I stayed at work for 5 days during all this. I was part of the honor guard, and I wound up standing beside caskets for 5 days as well. And so, you know, that.
So you.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This was 15 years ago. 17 years ago.
This was in 1995.
1995. So almost 20 years ago.
Right. Almost 20 years ago.
And what did that do to you when you're thinking about firefighting?
Well, you always kind of think in the back of your mind, you know, I could die today in a fire. But uh-huh. As a firefighter, you don't expect to be shot. You don't expect one of your own to do the deed of shooting someone. Obviously, this gentleman had some psychological issues, and, you know, that was, you know, a very devastating day in the history of our department. You know, it was because of this incident, there, a few months later, I was promoted to district chief to fill the position of one of the individuals who was killed.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's one of the major tragedies in my life. And you learn to respond, and you think you're tough, you think you can handle anything till it happens to you or to someone close to you.
Yeah.
And that's, but you know, you play when something happens, you know, your training kicks in, and you do what you have to do to take care of the situation. It's the post-traumatic that, you know, that you have to deal with later.
Right. In the moment, you can do what you're trained to do, but subsequent to that, you start thinking about what's happened, and you weep over your friends. You wonder what you didn't see. I'm putting words in your mouth, so. That's where the PTSD kicks in.
Correct. That you're correct. And one thing that I did not realize is how much this affected my wife, how much she was affected by what went on. You know, I was going through my own thing, you know, my own trying to deal with this, and it wasn't until later that I realized how bad that she was broken up about this. And how she worried about me from that day forward.
Sure. Because your job is already a dangerous job.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about hazardous materials as well as fire, and then here you have this the added danger of what kind of complexities are happening inside the house itself, where
right.
You don't know. You just never know.
Yes. That was one of the major issues there. I, kind of getting back to my story of me, I've served as a youth pastor. I've served as a children's pastor, music ministry, involved with Boy Scouts as a leader. Both of my sons were Boy Scouts, Eagle Scouts, and for the last 22 years, I guess, I've been working with Boy Scouts and training leaders. And involved in that. Let's see. Looking at my notes, see what I'm missing.
Well, let me ask you. I'm going to jump gears and then come back. Shift gears
okay.
And come back. If you look at your notes, what were your, when you remember your passion words from the intensive, what were your passion words?
My passion words were affect, A-F-F-E-C-T, affect.
Yep.
Believe, encourage, inspire, and teach.
And tell me, when you hear these words between encourage and inspire, what do you see as a difference?
Encourage is to help lift somebody up that's down. You know, that somebody they're needing a lift, and you know, helping someone when they're down. Inspire is to me is to try to place a spark in somebody or somebody's life to where they want to accomplish more than where they're at.
What is a time that you've inspired or placed a spark in someone's life that you remember most that sticks out to you?
Inspired, probably working in youth ministry. My first youth group, out of about 25 kids, four of those actually went into the ministry.
Hmm.
And not saying that I'd call them or anything like that, it's just I was able to have an influence or, you know, of some kind. And, you know, part of what I love to do is to see students in people I'm working with, see their eyes light up when they really get it. You know, whatever I'm trying to teach them, when it starts to click and their eyes, you can see in their eyes, that's what I was looking for. You know, that's inspiration to me.
Yeah. And when you say effect, what do you think of when you say effect? What are things that you've done? What are things that you want to do? What do you long to do with that word?
I want to have an effect on the future, on those that I'm around. I want to make a difference. That's you know, to me, education is no good and knowledge is no good if you can't share it and help somebody else, you know, to be able to utilize that information as well.
Yeah. So somebody mentions on the chat line, it seems like you're constantly giving and helping other people. Would you say that that's a fair, you know, and I'm not talking about bragging about yourself. I'm just saying a genuine evaluation of your life. Do you feel like a good chunk of it is just giving and helping people?
Yes, it is. You know, and yeah, I don't look for recognition or anything like that. But that's just in my nature. That's kind of the nature of a lot of people who are in the fire service, you know, or first responders or police officers or soldiers, military personnel. You have a desire to make a difference, to help.
And but your words, you know, affect people, encourage people, inspire people, teach people, your words seem to me very other-oriented. I'm not asking to brag about yourself. This is not about bragging, and I know that you're not doing that.
Right.
If I said to you the rest of your life, you're going to be able to study in a university, the it's going to be paid for, you're going to be able to teach and study under the best professors, but you'll never be able to teach again the rest of your life, what would you say?
I would say that it would be a waste of time. If what I'm learning can't benefit others, then you know, yeah, I'm gonna get some benefit out of it, and I will enjoy what I learn. But it's just something in me that just wants to share experiences that I've gone through, or share, you know, in order so somebody else may not have to go through as much as I've gone through. You know, try to, you know, maybe even to the point of trying to protect people.
Now, I've met you twice, and you're not one of those people who is constantly walking around teaching and talking. You're someone, to me, my experience of you is you're someone who's pretty reflective and observant. And I'm not saying that you don't want to teach or you shouldn't teach. I think that you should. What do you think it is about you that likes to watch people or observe or listen more than just always be talking?
That is kind of my nature, is to listen, and because I listen to see where their heart is. And, you know, people say a lot of words, but they don't always say what's on their heart. And if you listen and watch the actions and see the body language, you can read it. You can learn a lot about individuals. And when the opportunity comes, and it's kind of like that, when you've got something to say, it's in your heart, and you've got to say it. You know when you got to say something rather than just saying it for to hear yourself talk.
So when you had your intensive experience, your calling intensive in Kentucky, what was the feedback that people gave you that you can remember?
Well, some of the things that they gave is pretty much what you've talked about, that they mentioned that, you know, I was just 1 second. I listened to it again last night, and I wrote a few things down. I'm looking to find where I wrote that at. Some of the things they said, and if I, you know, once again, I have to say things, but I'm making statements that they make.
Yep.
It's not, you
exactly.
know. One of the guys in my group started out by saying, after he heard my story and everything, that he made a statement, "You are a true hero." And I don't necessarily see myself as a hero. I just see myself as someone who wants to help, who wants to make a difference. And
I know it's embarrassing to read these wonderful comments about you, but, you know, you're with friends here, Robbie. We just want to hear what people say, so don't worry about it. We like you. We love you. Just feel free to read it.
All right. I just made notes, so I'm just going to kind of go down it.
Okay.
Little things make a big difference, so you have to make adjustments along the way. And that's a comment that I made during our small group time, and they reflected that back to me, that the little things that I've done over time have helped to make a difference. You've got to always make course correction. As we go through life, if we stay on get tunnel vision, we can get off course. And so we have to, you know, make adjustments as we go. Some of the other things, one made a comment about one of my pictures, and they're talking about in that picture that has the storm in it.
Yeah.
It's preparing people for the storm that's coming. And made the comment that I was the type of person that tried to help people prepare for the storm that they'll be going through.
So as you're saying this, Yvette Bone from The Secret Garden says, "He sounds like a comforting person to be with or to turn to in time of need." Now, you were talking about preparing someone for a storm, but in the midst of a storm, you know, when somebody's going through a storm, do you sense people feeling you're a comfortable place to be, a safe place to be, you yourself?
Yeah, I think so. People know that they can confide in me and it won't go anywhere else. And when they need stability, I'll be there to help any way I can.
Yeah.
One of the other comments was that he said, "You are a hands-on guy, and the world needs hands-on people." And, you know, I like to build things. I like to repair things and do things like that. And that's kind of where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
One of the gentlemen also talked about mission. Like my mission seems to be to help prevent family breakup. My family, my parents went through a divorce when I was very young, and I promised myself that if any way possible, I would not go through that. And some of the things that, to me, from observation, I see that where people have the worst problems in a marriage has a lot to do with finances. And I feel like there's a need to teach our kids and our youth to manage their money and to make wise investments so that they can help, hopefully help remove that obstacle from their life. You know, there's always going to be problems with finances. You're never going to have enough money to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But if you have the right perspective, you know, it makes a lot of difference.
And this, again, is part of what you're saying about preparing people for storms in some senses, is you're helping them with finances, and it's a way of preparing them.
Right.
In this case, you're preparing them to avoid a storm, maybe. So
right. Exactly.
Avoiding storms are okay, too.
Right. One of the other comments is that he made the comment, you have a heart of compassion and love. And, yeah, dude, I love people. I love kids. I'm very involved in missions. I go on short-term mission trips every year. I've been going for about 8 years, mainly down to Honduras. And the love that these people give back to you, you go down intending to minister to them, and they minister to you instead. One of the things that was comment was, you know, that I was trustworthy, and that I seemed to be responsive to the Lord. Basically, what he's saying, I was, in his words, I was yes in advance to whatever he said.
Say that again.
He said, you were responsive to the Lord. Your yes in advance to whatever he says.
That's good.
I'm sorry?
That's a really good word.
It was, you know, a really good word. Another gentleman that is in our group, his comments were, you are a mountain of a man. And talking about in Isaiah how a tree is planted by the waters and is strong, not big in stature, but just strong.
Yeah.
And
Along those lines, Vern Heinemann of Basecamp said, Robbie, presence. You have an amazing presence, a command presence. And do you think that goes along with just sort of being a man? I mean, to me, I think there's something strengthening about your presence, as Vern is saying. You know, sometimes we all want wisdom, we all want good advice, but sometimes just frankly being with somebody makes a difference. For example, if I'm singing and somebody behind me has a really deep, wonderful baritone voice, you know, they're strong, they're on key, I sing twice as well when I have someone behind me singing well. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I understand that.
And I think what Vern is saying, there's a presence that you have that is sort of like that baritone voice behind me that makes me a better singer just by the presence of that other person. Would you say that rings true for you? I mean, it's embarrassing to say, admit that about yourself, but there's something about your presence that I think is strengthening for other people.
I think I do have a gift to help strengthen those that are down, to encourage those that are down. Not necessarily from what I say, from just being there with them.
Yeah, exactly. Although what you say is probably really helpful too. So,
in the fire service, we use the term command presence, and when there is an emergency, my personality actually changes, and I am in charge. There's no doubt that I am in charge. That's, you know, I have that command presence, last night we had at church, we had a lady who fell. We were, after service, we were having a supper, and she tripped and fell. And that command presence kicked in right away, and I took charge of what the situation was. And people kind of look at you afterwards and say, I didn't really expect that out of you. But, you know, in the clutch, in the emergency, you have to do what you got to do.
Right.
You know, that's kind of where I think a man presence is. Sometimes, you know, people know that there's a difference in you. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and the thing is, it's an intuitive sense that they have. There's something that you carry that other people intuitively recognize. You can't fake it. They're going to recognize
right.
it a little bit more instinctively. You carry it instinctively, and I think people recognize it. So, Robbie, if you were to summarize what your calling was in a few words, you know, maybe it's some words or it's some pictures, what do you think in this moment, January 22nd, 2015, what would you say your effect of your life is?
I don't know exactly what God wants me to do, but I feel like it's a calling of sharing, mentoring, teaching, encouraging, giving hope to others. I'm very concerned about our future generations and our kids today. Not to the point there, you know, I think world is going to hell in a handbasket. I'm just concerned that there's so many influences on them that I'd like to have a legacy to be, my legacy to be that I made a difference in others and I encourage them to build on top of what I've been able to do and do even greater works than I've done. I don't care if my name's remembered in the future, but I hope my family remembers me, but you know,
I think they will.
the main thing I want to be remembered is the values that I have. And I hope those values are instilled in others.
So I'm going to ask people, and people have been commenting on the chat line for a while, so I'm going to continue to ask people right now. So everybody who's listening, if you have some reflections, I'm going to read them off to Robbie, and I want you just to type them into the chat line. And I know there's a minute delay, so I'm going to just first say a couple things. But if other people see things, even if you said it before, repeat it again. Robbie, I would say one of the things that I see in you is it sort of comes back to, in a certain sense, your mixture of music and your firefighting. I loved what you said when you said in high school you loved music, and I said, why? You said, it's an expression of being. It's what the heart says. It lifts those who are down up. And, of course, that just goes along with your encouraging people and inspiring people. I think there's a mixture of – it's sort of like you're a poetic firefighter, someone who is hands-on. A firefighter is someone who's hands-on. You're protecting people in the middle of fire. And in Michigan, I'm sure in Mississippi, firefighters are also preparing people. They're preparing their houses. They're teaching people how to avoid fires, how to get rid of hazardous materials. So there's something in you that I think is designed to prepare people, to lift up the lowly. You know what Scripture says the ideal king is? It says it in multiple Psalms, and it talks about it when it's a prophecy of King David, is he lifts the poor from the dust. He raises the needy from the ash heap. And I think that's somebody who you are. That's the true leader. You're lifting the poor from the dust. You're raising the needy from the ash heap. I think that's part of who you are. And you do that by encouraging them. You do that with hands-on. You do that with inspiring. Sometimes you just do it with your presence. I think there's a safety in you that Yvette Bowen was talking about in The Secret Garden. There's a safetiness in you. So those are some of my comments. I'm going to read a couple other things that people have said. Vern, again, talked about you being someone who has just a presence. And I do think there's a presence that you have, Robbie. You're that baritone voice behind me, that your presence helps me be the man that I can be. Vern also says there is a quiet alignment of strength and authority. And I have to put words and voices in Vern's mouth, but I like the way he put the quiet alignment, because we have people who are strength, who are strong and authoritative, but they're not quiet. You know, they're loud, they're bossy. You have a quiet strength that aligns things, which I think is just what you would want. You know, as I hear your voice, you even said, I don't care if no one remembers me, although I hope my family does. You know, you want to make a difference, but I don't think you care about it being credited to you. You just want the difference to happen. Dan Ainsworth, who you know, says you're calm with a strength from within. And would you say that you have a strength from within?
Yes, I do. And it comes from God. It's not something that I can claim. It's just that there's a strength that comes through my faith.
So Yvette Bone on Secret Garden says she sees a stability. She said, you get that sense from him, like everything is going to be okay. I think that's that strength from within. And as you said, I think it's coming from God, your peace from God. Lori from Secret Garden says she senses a sincerity and an empathy for people. In other words, if someone is hurting, I think you have deep compassion. And, in fact, Lisa Sapp says she sees deep compassion that's played out in your life through the fire department and the youth work. So, and Vern says that he feels like you're a conduit of the Father's heart, as though you're a father to everyone you encounter. Would you say that that's true? Do you feel like people see you as a father to them?
I believe a lot of people do. They need stability. They need. I don't necessarily tell people what to do. I don't even tell my kids what decisions they need to make. But they know that I'm there to be a sounding board for them. And now I'll preface that with or come back with that and say, if somebody's going to mess up and it's going to be a dire mistake, I would definitely say something. But we learn from our experiences. And just like when I was training people how to pump a truck on the fire department,
mm-hmm.
I would get out there and I would go through the steps and I'd let them go through it. And if they get to a point where they're messing up and they can't get water through the hose,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to just stop and tell them right away, this is where you messed up. I'll say, okay, let's walk back through the steps.
Yeah.
And let them walk back through the steps so they find where they messed up. Because if you fix the problem for them, they can't learn. And then when I'm on the fire scene and that pump operator can't get water on that truck, I can't stop what I'm doing and go out there and get the water for him.
Right.
So he has to learn how to walk back through the steps and find out where did I mess up. And I don't know where I'm going with this because, you know, but
I think it's a perfect reflection of the way you would teach something because Jason Reed says you bring stability to situations, bringing chaos into stability, bringing stability out of chaos, which is the very thing you're talking about. I'm guessing in a firefight, it's chaos.
Oh, yes.
You're trying to bring stability. But your example right there was you didn't just tell somebody what to do because you're not going to be there in the maelstrom of chaos in a firefight. You need to teach him how to be able to figure it out, and that's just what you did. So you're bringing stability in the midst of that chaos of a fire hose not working because you're teaching him something. As
well,
Bert says, mistakes are wisdom in training.
Yes.
Yvette Bone, who left, she says she had to leave, but she says a person like you is needed by a person like her. She tends to see and experience life dramatically, and her calling will often lead her into challenging situations. But she said, listening to Robbie's voice and assuredness tonight lowered my blood pressure.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
But then Lisa Stapp, who's from Australia, she's living in Australia right now, said, a note of thanks to you, Robbie. The day our son died after an accident in our home, the fire department first responders were amazingly supportive and helpful, along with the policemen on the scene. We have tremendous respect and gratitude for you and all your coworkers. So I think that she's just talking about the differences, as you were saying, the little differences that really make a huge difference in people's lives.
They do.
You know, in the big tragedy in Lisa's life.
Yes. You have to have compassion. Compassion is very important in every aspect of life, but of leaders, of people who want to make a difference in the world, you've got to have compassion for those that are hurting.
Mm-hmm. So we have to close this, but I'm going to close it with a comment that Vern makes, which he calls you a context creator, meaning making safe spaces to learn. I think we struck on some of that earlier on. I do think that you're someone who makes places safe for people. You make it safe by helping prepare them, you know, to forestall crises. I think you do it to prepare them when they are in a crisis. And I do believe there's something about your presence, Robbie, that brings a calm in the midst of a storm. And you know that when you're in a firefight, you need people to be able to be as calm as possible, to be able to deal with this. You need to be able to hands-on and act, but people going hyper and crazy aren't going to be able to succeed as well. I really believe that you're a fine man. And so we're going to end this, but Robbie, before you close your night, I really wish you could go into the base camp and read what they have, and then I'm going to copy everything on the Secret Garden and send it over to you so you can see what they said as well.
All right. I appreciate that.
Hey, Robbie, thank you very much for this evening. It was just great to – it was an honor for us. It really was an honor for us to hear your life and to be able to share with you what we see.
Thank you, Sam. I enjoyed it, and I pray that everybody has a good, safe night, and we get to see each other again soon.
Okay. Hey, God bless. Thanks, everyone. This is really good to be together.